Hello, you're listening to the Bonded Books podcast, where we discuss books, fight over book boyfriends, and the lack of filter is a family trait. If you're lucky, you might even hear one of our dogs barking in the background. Because hey, if we have to deal with them, then so do you. We hope to dazzle you with our discussion while not being hurtful to the authors we feature. Success not guaranteed. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Oh, hi.
Hi.
I can see your video.
Oh, no. I have a doctor video appointment today, so I put it up because I never remember to put it up. And then the doctor's like, I can't see you.
Well, I could maybe put mine on if you want.
No, I will heckle you. Let's start. Okay.
Oh my gosh, that's cute. What is that, a teddy bear or a bunny or something?
It's a cat.
Oh, I couldn't see the tail. Okay,
cute. Yeah, it's little purse.
Yes.
And then here's the alien that I finished.
Adorable. He's got a little vest, or is that a backpack?
No, it's a vest.
Okay.
And then the last thing is this kitty.
Aw.
Isn't it cute?
Very cute.
I got to make some for the kids, I guess. Yeah. So what's happening? How are you? Are you exhausted?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm good. Things are fine here. I went on Saturday and we saw that movie, If. Remember I was telling you about the one about imaginary friends?
Uh-huh.
So it was written and directed by John Krasinski, which is the guy that we all love from The Office. And he's done, you know, a million things since then, right?
Yes.
And then the main guy in the movie is Ryan Reynolds.
From
all the previews, it looks like a comedy and it's kind of like upbeat and it looks cute and fun. This movie was so like sad and down and serious. And I was like, they really do not know how to advertise to actually fit the theme of this fucking movie.
Oh, sad. Oh, yeah. I'm surprised.
Yeah, I was actually pretty bored at one point.
Oh.
You know, Melly said she really liked it, but I was just like, eh, it was okay. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It was kind of depressing, but, you know, it was all right. It's just not like upbeat, but oh well.
Did you tell her how you had not one, but two imaginary friends when you were a kid?
No.
You are always an overachiever. One was a cat. I don't remember what the other one was. I'm like, okay, good thing I know that's a sign of intelligence and not that you're crazy.
How funny. No, I mean, she does know that I had imaginary friends when I was a kid, but I think, you know, maybe now that's why I love cats so much and I have so many real cats.
That might be. Did your children have imaginary friends?
No.
Oh, well. maybe it's every other generation. I don't know.
Well, maybe. I mean, but they also had each other
Claire was like 4 when her sister was born. So,
yeah. Claire.
Yeah.
She's hilarious.
Yeah. So anything else new and exciting?
Not really. Yeah, no, not really. We could talk about Bridgerton a little bit if you want. But
oh, yes, let's.
Did you finish all the... So, as of right now, there's only 4 episodes out.
Yeah, so when are they dropping the next ones?
June. There's a month in between, which is stupid.
Yeah, that's really stupid. Yes, I watched it. I liked it. I don't like him as a sexy leaning man. He just doesn't do it for me, but I really like her. There's a ton of postings with her on Instagram since Bridgerton came out. She's like 37 or 38. I was really surprised. And she's actually Irish and just mastered an English accent. But I really like her. I kind of feel bad for the conflict between her and what's his sister's name?
Eloise.
You remember? Eloise, yeah. So the next ones are going to be interesting to see what Eloise does to blow up her world, which is sad. And that blonde, oh, geez.
Yeah, I enjoyed the season because I liked the costumes and the hair that the queen was wearing and things like that. But I really don't like Colin. So I'm not sure. We'll see how the next, I'm assuming there's only 4 more episodes, which is really annoying. We had to wait 2 years and what, are we only going to get 8 episodes?
Yeah. Yeah, so, and I'm thinking now that maybe the mother's going to get a storyline because she met that woman's brother. And there are still several children left. I don't know how many books were written. Do you?
I think it's 1 book for each kid.
Okay.
So 7 or 8.
Yeah, my, even this far in, my very favorite one is still the first one. They were blazing. They were so hot. That guy was so friggin' handsome. And I just think everybody else has kind of paled in comparison. I don't like it as much. But yes, the queen's hair, I even did a zoom in on Instagram to see what exactly was inside that wig that she was wearing. Did you see the wig that had like, some
yes it was swans, it wasn't it yeah. Swan Lake,
yeah it was pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her outfits are the best, and I really liked her interactions with the, is he a butler, the guy that's always attending? So I think that really fit well because you got a lot of his story in the Queen Charlotte series. Mm-hmm,
yes. Yes.
So that was cute to see them together, but I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I really liked some of the side characters. I liked the one sister who's the pianist who was with the guy. There's like one of the memes is like, this is how introverts flirt. And it was, you know, it's just a picture of them sitting side by side and not speaking.
Oh, yeah. Because
a lot of their scenes are them not speaking, which is hilarious.
She is so incredibly beautiful. I just keep staring at her. I'm like, my God, I don't remember her in the other storylines, but I think of all of them, she really is the most beautiful.
I think she was recast this season. So that's probably why you can't necessarily place her.
She was
a different actress, I believe, in the first 2 seasons.
Oh, and I think the guy the queen wants to set her up with is going to actually end up with that blonde.
Mm. Yeah. That blonde has to end up with somebody.
Yeah.
Cressida.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, all right. I'm sure we'll report back once we watch the second part and see how that goes. And hopefully it makes up for it.
The one thing. Wait, there's one thing I want to talk to you about because they were talking about it online. And when I saw it, when I was watching it, I was like, is that happening? Because why I think it's happening. But at the end, when they're in the carriage together,
mm-hmm.
and he takes her dress off her shoulder, or her dress falls off her shoulder, and his hands underneath her skirt, mm-hmm. when he goes to put the dress back on her shoulder, do you notice that he doesn't use the two fingers that he had under her skirt?
No.
You didn't notice that? I did, and I was like, whoa, I can't believe they showed that. He used his third finger to pull her shoulder back up of her dress. Huh. And then there was a posting on Instagram about it, and it said how many people caught this happening. And the reason, you know, some people were like, well, why? I don't get it. And so people were saying, because his fingers are wet, he didn't want to get it on her dress. I mean, oh my God. I was like, it's just hilarious.
So I saw another meme that was, so in one of the episodes, he licks his finger because he has like cupcake frosting on them or something. Uh-huh. It's like, it was not, maybe it was that same episode or it was a prior episode. So it was a still shot of him licking his fingers from that scene. And the caption was something like, if he had done this after the carriage scene, I would have fallen out of my chair.
I thought that's what I was going to say. I'm like, if he had only put them in his mouth, I would have died, because that's what a lot of male people do in these books that we review. And I'm like, uh-huh. What's he going to do with those fingers now? He should just put them in his mouth. I thought the exact same thing. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how it is when they have their actual sex scenes. I guess at point I saw an interview and they actually like broke a piece of furniture in one of the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope that makes the final cut. Like, I really hope we get to see that.
It was, yeah. I saw that interview too, because she said they had no direction. They were just told to go for it. He looks very different in real life in those interviews, doesn't he?
I think they both look really different. I mean, her hair is like not, I mean, obviously the hair color is the biggest change, but yeah, they all look different to me.
Yeah, she's so pretty in real life. I mean, even in Bridgerton, when they redid her hair, I was like, oh my God, she looks amazing. And her dresses were amazing. I love the color of them. Yeah, I like seeing all the fashion of that. I'm glad as fuck that I never had to wear any of that, because it would have killed you. But yeah.
It is also really interesting to see stuff like that. And then you really understand the power that clothes can have on how you look, because the colors, the cuts of the dresses, the way they just like lay on her body, like really accentuated the like voluptuousness nature of her figure, instead of before she just looked frumpy. I mean, she's supposed to look frumpy and dumpy and horrible in these colors that her mom used to force her to wear, and the outfits and everything. And now she just looks way better, a million times better in these outfits.
Well, they even showed an interview of her where she's wearing something underneath her corset while she's doing an interview and explaining how the dresses are made. And I'm like, holy shit, she's got a knockout body.
Yeah. She's a cute little thing when you see her outside. And then I didn't realize until recently, because all these interviews that have been happening, she was also on that TV show, The Dairy Girls. Dairy Girls.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. Did you watch that?
I only watched like one episode of it and never like watched the whole thing. But as soon as I saw a picture of her from that show, I was like, oh shit, that is her.
Yeah, it's totally her. It was so, I loved that show. In fact, I think I may watch it again because it's so funny. And having been raised and sent to Catholic school, I could so relate to what was going on. But yeah, you should watch it. It's really good. And she's amazing in that. She has so much Catholic guilt going on. It's unbelievable.
Oh, I love it.
I'm trying to rearrange my screen so I can see you or see me. It doesn't matter. I can't. All right. So let's talk about this book. I've been looking forward to talking to you about it.
Okay.
So how did we find this book? You had read it already a long time ago, right?
I don't remember how we found this book to read, but this is a book by the same author who wrote Dragon Chained, which we had done for season 3, episode 17. I was not a huge fan of that book. You really liked the book. I think you read the whole series even.
Oh, yeah, I did.
And once I don't remember how this book came up, but as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my God, I actually really liked that book. And it's by the same author. I didn't even realize it. So that was just
a
funny little thing.
It came up because I really liked the Dragon Chain series and I wanted to read something else by Kenley Davidson. I really like her and I'm trying to find other authors. And so I stumbled upon this and I asked you, have you read this or? Yeah. All right. So let's get into it.
Okay. So the book is called The Faceless Madge, Book 1 of The Legends of Abrea by Kenley Davidson. And I love the cover. I thought it was really pretty.
Yeah, I did too.
And then I liked the dedication. It says, "For Teresa, consider this my solemn promise that someday there will be a map."
That was funny. I would have highlighted that too. But what happened was, I think I read the whole book before we decided to do it and I hadn't highlighted anything. But when I read that, I was thinking of you because you so love a good map in a book.
I do love a map in a book, but I'm not that great about going back to reference the map as I read. Sometimes I do, but I do like a map. Maybe that harkens back to the Harry Potter days. I don't know.
Oh, you know what? I'm sure you're right.
Yeah. So this book was longer than what we normally do, because now that we're doing every other week, we can pick stuff that's a little bit longer. But then at the same time, I feel like it's a little hard to summarize what's happening or talk about what's happening because it is longer. So much shit happens in this book. And this is book one in a 6-book series. So there's a lot of setup here.
There is a lot of setup, but I got to say, this setup is done in a really good way because there's a lot of times when there's a lot, for me, when there's a lot of information dumping, it's overwhelming. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? I don't know. But in this book, the way it was written, I didn't feel that way. I felt like I could understand what was happening. And yes, there were many characters, but it was written in a way that I thought was really easy to follow. What'd you think?
I agree with you, but then saying that, I feel like maybe summarizing it is going to be hard or maybe kind of confusing because there's not a lot of characters in this book. There's, you know, that's kind of what overwhelms me when you have a big setup like this, too many characters and too many names. But in this one, there's a king from one kingdom, and then there's a king in another kingdom. And then there's the one king has a daughter, so there's a princess. The other king has a son, so a prince. And it's essentially the two kings are trying to navigate a marriage alliance between kingdoms with their kids, but the princess for most of the book is being played or is actually somebody else, I should say. So I feel like I'm going to like try my best to explain what's happening, but people might get confused because it's like, well, is it the princess or is it the girl pretending to be the princess? And which king is it? It was not confusing to read at all. I'm just throwing it out there. I might confuse it unnecessarily.
Yeah. So there's a total of four kingdoms, which are discussed through the series. And there's the two kingdoms that we are going to be talking about are in the first book, like Rachel said, where they're trying to make this alliance with their children to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But before we get in that, we're introduced to someone else.
In the prologue?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Do you want to talk about the prologue or do you want me to talk about it?
I can talk about it. So in the prologue, it starts with some mystery man who wakes up and he is inside a full set of armor and he has no control over his own actions. And someone's telling him what to do and another person is assisting. And his life becomes taking orders and waiting for eventual revenge. And I felt this was scary to me because this guy is trapped. He can't talk. He can't move anything of his body. He's totally and completely under someone's control. And he's used as a weapon of fear and control by someone.
Mm-hmm. It was really scary, but also sad. Like, you feel bad for this person because they're like a puppet for whoever is controlling them. We find out eventually who's controlling them and who this mystery person is. But it's just the prologue is really sad.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
So then chapter one actually is not from that mystery guy's perspective. It's from a girl's perspective. Her name is Liza. And she is being given an assignment from King Soren of Far Hall. And I had to highlight this when I was reading because I knew right away this was going to be something interesting because why would the king do this? It says, Liza was far from the only orphan in the capital city of Arendar. But in her case, King Soren had made the inexplicable decision to take her in. I was like, okay, there's something about her. She's not like other girls, you guys.
Yes. Yep.
So normally she is a bodyguard for the princess, Everin. I don't really know how to say her name. And actually her name in chapter one was spelled differently from how it was spelled throughout the rest of the book, which was kind of weird, but whatever.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, I didn't. Oh, it is. I can see now. Everin, and then Everin with an E and then an A. Yeah, you're right. Typo.
Yeah. I mean, regardless of how it's spelled, I'm probably saying it completely incorrectly. So anyways, the king is giving her an important and dangerous task. And we find out that this kingdom, Far Hall, only has one thing to trade for its securities, and it's a princess of marriageable age who was her father's sole heir. And conveniently, the wealthiest of the neighboring kingdoms had a younger son who was apparently pleased to be used by his parents to establish an alliance with a much smaller, much poorer kingdom than his own. So right away, it's kind of like, why would this super rich, big kingdom want this like nobody princess from this little poor country? And you're only going to get her in exchange. It's kind of raising some red flags. So that's why the king wants Liza to go check it out to make sure that the exchange or not exchange, the alliance will be beneficial for his daughter.
Yeah, he's not willing to risk his daughter. So he's sending Liza in her stay. And on top of it, the princess has all these health problems and is super weak. She's we're told over and over again how fragile she is. So he wants to make sure that she's going to be okay with this alliance. Cause even he is like, why do they want anything to do with our kingdom? We have really nothing but my daughter. And he's not willing to risk her. He's already lost his wife.
Mm-hmm. Which is really sad because he did raise Liza. And even though she's not his daughter, she kind of felt like their relationship was a little more than king and bodyguard. But he really puts her in her place quickly and is like, no, like, you have to do this. I don't care what you say. He only gives her 3 weeks to learn how to be a princess. She's like, this is a death assignment. Like, I'm going to fuck up one of these 7,000 curtsies I have to memorize.
Oh my God, it was horrible. Yeah, there were so many. I was like, oh, I would never have been able to do that.
Mm-hmm. So chapter one is basically her getting the assignment, trying to learn as much as she can in this short amount of time. And then it's the carriage ride for 2 weeks to get to this other kingdom, which is the kingdom of Garamore. And we find out that she is, quote unquote, wearing Everin's face. And that was kind of interesting. Like, okay, she's doing something to change her appearance so she looks like the princess. And then I also have a note that in this chapter or throughout the story, there's a lot of references to Liza's hearing and how she's always had really, really good hearing. Mm-hmm. And we also don't know anything about her family except that they left her a dagger that she treasured and she thinks almost as much as she feared it. So all these little nuggets kind of sprinkling through to, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Your video just turned off. So I didn't know what happened.
I got tired of looking at myself.
Oh, okay. So chapter one ends with her arriving at the other kingdom at their castle. And she arrives with some guards. She calls them her honor guard. And she has some ladies in waiting, which I guess are also supposed to be handmaidens for her. And there's a word of warning that King Soren from Farhal had given her before she left. He said, there is a threat to your ruse, perhaps even greater than any member of the royal court. He is almost always within earshot of King Melgar, and they call him the King's Raven, the royal bodyguard. He does not speak and seems to exist only to do the king's bidding. It is possible that he is not a man at all beneath his mask and armor, but whatever he is, there are those who believe him to be the instrument of the king's will in all matters regarding mages in Garamore.
Yeah, he's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. But it's also kind of interesting because King Melgar is well known for hating mages of all types. So who is this mystery man, the Raven? We find out eventually it was that guy from the prologue, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she does end up meeting her potential fiancé. He is Prince Vanil. And I really liked their interactions throughout the entire book. He's kind of a comic relief.
Yeah, I like
throughout
him too.
The story.
Smart Alec.
Yes. And he also hates his father. So he is subtly, and sometimes not so subtly, going against him in funny ways.
Yeah, and she knows, they know his history. He is quite a ladies' man. He's considered lazy, and all he does is spend his father's wealth and womanize and doesn't give two shits about anything or anybody.
He's also the second son, because while this kingdom is willing to marry off one of their sons to this small, know-nothing princess, they're not willing to marry off the firstborn son. And King Melgar, does it come out in this book that maybe like there's some weird lineage thing happening with Prince Viniel?
I don't know if it comes out in this book or not, to be honest. I don't remember. But I do know that his firstborn son, his name is Danric, and he is the total opposite of his younger brother. He is very honorable and very dedicated to his father and super supportive of his father. So he is the favored son who this king thinks someday will take over his kingdom and be the future king. But this Prince Viniel, however you say his name, is good enough to marry off to this princess to secure an alliance. But I think he's saving the firstborn son for a better alliance, shall we say.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right.
So I just have one example of their banter that was funny. So the prince at one point says, "One never knows when some poor backwoods principality might take advantage of our insecurity with an army of serving girls." And Liza responds, "I'm sure no number of serving girls could ever threaten something so great as your insecurity."
Yeah, because even though, you know, the king hurt her feelings, she's very much, she likes the princess. They grew up together. And she's very dedicated to protecting her kingdom. So she doesn't like these cracks that the king makes a lot of cracks to her, too, that are not nice.
Right. And at some point in this chapter, she gets a chill down her spine and she sees the mystery man for the first time. And she describes him as being tall, broad-shouldered. Oh, his tall, broad-shouldered form seemed to swallow the light and give back only shadows wrapped in deadly silence.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Mm-hmm. Then the raven has a tense interaction with the prince. And it seems like in here, this chapter, we're getting the sense that the prince is not only not a fan of the king, he's also not a fan of the raven.
Yeah.
And then the next chapter, I really like this because although the raven can't speak, we get his point of view, which was wonderful because otherwise it's going to be even more of a mystery.
Yeah.
So he is intrigued by the princess, which we know as the readers is actually Lies in disguise. And he thinks her appearance lied. And he also thinks he would have wagered there was nothing fragile or harmless about her, but there was no one to wager with. And in any case, he had no plans to share his observations. No one cared what he saw or what he thought. He was mute judgment made flesh, and he did only what his master commanded.
Yeah, sad, gross.
And from his perspective, we find out that this is 10 years after the prologue. So he's been the Raven for 10 years. And he also thinks once he had a name, now he was nothing, only dark purpose, King's Raven, cloaked in the blood and the screams of the king's enemies.
Yeah, it was horrible. It's terrible.
I know.
I'm terrified of him, but I feel really bad for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this helps us feel bad for him because we are getting his perspective. So we know he's actually a good guy on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Which is how we like our bad guys, right?
Yes. Yeah, we do.
So his interactions with Liza throughout the book are pretty funny. But unfortunately, he knows at some point the king is probably going to order him to kill her. So he kind of enjoys being around her, or he's intrigued by her, but he doesn't want to get too close because he's probably going to have to kill her eventually.
Yeah, because once the king gives him an order, he has no control over his body. he just does whatever the king says. And he thinks as much as he would hate it, he's probably going to have to kill her eventually. And there's nothing he can do to stop it.
Right. And Lysa's determined after about 10 minutes in the kingdom that the alliance was a terrible idea. She thinks that the prince is arrogant, but also dangerously intelligent. She thinks the king is paranoid and that the queen is utterly oblivious. And she also overhears a conversation between the two princes, Prince Vanille and his older brother, Danric, where Danric is kind of an asshole of similar measure to Vanille. And Vanille calls her a princess without beauty or wit, which is really mean.
That's so mean.
But in addition to her really good hearing, she also has this unnatural ability to sense when the raven is near, which I loved because
yeah,
we all know I'm a sucker for like any sort of potential like mate thing or so this all her always sensing him made me think like, oh my God, they're mates. I love it.
Yeah. Something's going to happen.
Right. So while she's listening to the princes talk to one another, it's described as saying she was so intent on the prince's words, she almost missed the creeping feeling of dread that began by drying out her mouth and forming an ache in the pit of her stomach. It felt like magic, a dark, angry swell of power. And as she pulled her awareness back into herself, Lysa could feel the pressure of a focused regard that left her hands shaking and her knees weak, just like it had earlier that same day.
Yeah.
So she's always kind of having little feelings like that when the raven is near. And the king sometimes gives very specific orders to the raven. Sometimes they're sort of vague, and after 10 years the raven has figured out to how to navigate that vagueness. So at one point the king assigns the raven to watch Everin, but he failed to specify the purpose for that surveillance.
I love this loophole.
Right. So it also says in the book, he didn't have to stand that close. So he starts like following her and watching her, right? So it says he didn't have to stand that close, didn't need to listen to her heartbeat, sense the warmth of her skin, or search her features for the remains of her fear. But for reasons he didn't care to consider too carefully, he did anyway, which was when he became aware of the unsettling brush of her power, an energy that hummed just beneath her skin, and gave her that strange vitality he'd already noted more than once. Except now, he could give it a name. The princess was a Madge.
Yeah.
And then I loved this line too, because of course she's drawn to him, just like he's drawn to her. So she goes to reach for him at one point, and it says she lifted it, reached towards him, as though she intended to actually touch him. It was his turn to be frozen by shock. She was supposed to be horrified, not curious.
Yeah, poor raven. She can sense some magic in him, and she has magic too, but she doesn't know, and we don't know the full extent of her magic, other than she can change her face.
Right, and he thinks that she's the princess, and he also knows that the king from this kingdom absolutely hates mages. So, like, why the fuck? And he's well known for it. So he's like, why is this other kingdom sending a princess here for a marriage alliance who has magic? That's going to end terribly.
Correct. Well, that's one of the things about their two different kingdoms. The kingdom the princess is from welcomes mages and magic, and it's kind of a reference for magical people, a refuge, I should say, for magical people, whereas this kingdom is the total opposite. They have heard rumors that the king hates anybody that has magic, especially mages, and that he has them slaughtered. He has them killed. So they're very concerned about joining these kingdoms anyway, for that reason alone, because they don't want to, they want to protect the people that have magic, and this kingdom wants to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now we're a couple chapters into the story, and the king assigns the raven as the princess's bodyguard, which I have a note that says it's forced proximity, which is my favorite. Mm-hmm. So now they're spending a lot of time together. And we get a little bit more background on Everin, but you had already mentioned this before, that she was weak and often ill, but that she never complained. And Liza starts talking to the raven, even though he can't talk back, just because he's always around. I thought it was hilarious. She ends up having a lot of random one-sided conversations with him. Mm-hmm. But while she's having these conversations, she starts to have some feelings or intuition from him. And it says, it had to have been her imagination, but she had the oddest notion that the looming mountain of menace was suddenly feeling amused. And that honor guard that she was given to bring with her, King Melgar doesn't really want her to have them around. So he doesn't really let them in the castle. He doesn't let them around her. He says, you can't bring forces, army people, whatever, into my castle. We have our own guards to protect you. And of course, these honor guards force their way in to check on her. It seems like something super random I'm mentioning right now, but it's only being mentioned because it does come into play later on in the story.
Well, it's really inappropriate that she doesn't even, they isolate her from everybody, even her ladies in waiting. They, as soon as they arrive, they separate them using whatever excuse. And while she's touring the castle, the king makes all the ladies leave. And she's shocked that he would do such a thing and says, my father would not approve of this. And he's like, well, we have women that can help you. Oh, and also you can't see your honor guard. And one of the honor guard, what is his name? Xander. Xander has known her since she arrived at the castle, and he's very protective of, nobody knows, the honor guards, nobody knows that she is not the princess. Even the honor guards think she's the princess. And he has guarded both her and the real princess all their lives. And so it's very inappropriate that the king would not allow her to have her own honor guards. But he's got Raven. So he thinks, we don't need honor guards because Raven will protect you. Will he? Question mark.
Yeah, so all that's sort of happening, but she's also trying to navigate this potential marriage alliance. She's actually supposed to be there for 2 weeks, I believe, sussing it out before she returns back home. So in the meantime, she's having more interactions with her potential fiance. At one point, he gives her a necklace that has some sort of magical power. Now, I don't remember when I was doing my notes if this power is ever really explained, but I'm thinking maybe it's amplification or something.
I think that it's just a way for Raven to track her. I don't think it's really explained either, but she feels some magic. But since they don't know that she has magic, it is, I think, amplifying her magic a little. But it's also a link to Raven.
Yeah, it does something. Like, she gets kind of this gross feeling from it. The Raven gets this feeling of it being powerful and potentially useful. But once she starts wearing the necklace, she starts to have more and more interactions with the Raven, and eventually she's able to communicate with him. But he also is able to track her without the necklace, but maybe the necklace made their bond stronger. And so
I think it did, you know.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know. But anyways, the necklace is important. And she thinks, or it says, her gaze moved to Melgar, and the raven found himself pinned between their minds. Speculation and unease from the princess, shock and fear from the king. So as soon as she starts wearing that necklace, he's able to kind of get some more information from her. And eventually it ends up getting so strong that it's like actual words. But at the beginning, it's just feelings.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that since she could sense something wrong with this necklace, but she still wore it. I don't know.
I think she like knew that it was super important and it was like gigantic diamond. So I don't know. Maybe she was like, I have to wear it because it's a courting gift.
Yeah, supposed to, Vanille gives it to her as quote unquote a courting gift. But when the king sees it, he's afraid and mad that Vanille would give this thing to her. So I don't know what the original intent was for this necklace, but the king's not happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so this is kind of some info about how she uses the necklace to build that bond with him. So it says he could feel her discomfort, but she pressed past it, back to the point where his magic and hers seemed able to regard one another. And then she pressed still further until she found him. She saw him, not his magic this time, but his very self. And she felt him in the same way he could feel her. And it startled him so profoundly that he lashed out. And she uses the pendant fairly often, and she kind of realizes through that growing bond that the raven is also a prisoner of the king's and that he's very powerful. He's also magical. Mm-hmm. And as she's spending time at the castle, she realizes what her power actually is. So because she's had this power her whole life, and her parents abandoned her, she didn't really know like the actual name for it. She obviously knows how to do the magic, the very basic version of the magic, but she didn't have good teachers. So she learns that the term for her type of magic is mirror mag. And that's why she can change her appearance. She uses mirrors to change her reflection, how she looks. Makes her very dangerous. And these are like the most feared type of mages because they can be absolutely anybody in the world.
Yeah, I can understand why this type of magic would be perceived as dangerous because she can be anybody. So they don't know who they're talking to. They don't know if it's the real person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at this point, the raven still doesn't know that she's not actually the princess. He just thinks that she's the princess and that she has magic and she's keeping it under wraps. And Liza is thinking that their bond or this linking that's happening is because of the necklace. That's the only reason, but we know it's not. At one point, she visits the honor guard because they are locked up because they went in the castle that one time and they weren't supposed to. That's a no-no.
Right.
And because the honor guard, like you said, doesn't know that she's not actually the princess, he's talking to her as if he would normally talk to the princess. So he's begging her, you have to go, you have to leave, save yourself. If this kingdom finds out you have magic, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And they're going to hurt you. Like, please, I'm begging you, leave us here in this prison and go off. Save yourself. So this is like a shock to Liza because she's like, holy shit, the princess has magic. Also, like, known her my whole life, had absolutely no idea.
Well, Xander, again, he's the head of the honor guard and he's the one that's known them their whole lives. He's the one that knows. And wants her, even at the sacrifice of himself and the other guards, to save her, get her back to her father, and he's willing to sacrifice himself to do it. So sad.
Yes. Yeah, and I guess this kind of plays into why the princess is always viewed as weak or being sick a lot. Is she not actually weak or sick? I think maybe it's something having to do with her magic.
That's why she's weak and sick. Her magic makes her weak and sick.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, obviously in this book, it's not described. But I'm right. Sure in one of the six books in the series, we figure out how her magic affects her or what her magic actually is.
Yes.
So okay. Now we're towards the end of the book, or three quarters of the way through, maybe. And Liza has to try to escape where she is and return to her home kingdom. She wants to warn the king that Melgar is not a good guy, that he hates magic. And also, because the honor guard is locked up, she wants to try to rescue them. Of course, she runs off, and the raven is sent to pursue her.
So scary.
And when they, right. And, you know, depending on what he says, is he going to kill her instantly? Like, how's it going to play out? He doesn't kill her instantly, and she is able to remove all of his armor except for a pair of cuffs on his wrists, which I, like, loved this, like, portion at the end of the book, how all of this was described.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And he thinks, had he known what she was capable of, he would have offered her everything he would ever possess to do what she had just done of her own free will. And so she's able to take that mask off, because when we say full body armor, like literally everything is covered. You couldn't even see his eyes. So the mask came off, so he now has free will, but he still has these cuffs, bracers on his wrists, and those are chaining his power. So while he has free will, he's still not back to full power yet.
Right.
And when she's able to see his face, she thinks her raven was a night elf, the most powerful and mysterious of all Abria's magical races, shapeshifters, hunters, feared and avoided.
I loved it when she finally saw him.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's like, oh, and he's a shapeshifter? Like, what?
Yeah. Yes.
So he asks her if she would return with him to his home country after she goes to speak to her king, because of course she still has loyalty to her king and her kingdom and the princess. So she wants to have this whole discussion with them, try to fix a bunch of things. She says yes to that. And in order to get him to believe her that she will return to him, she gives him that dagger that her parents left her when she was a child, like 3 or 5 years old, like very little. And the book ends with her leaving him and running off to return to her home kingdom. So it ends on a cliffhanger.
But doesn't she go back to her own form? Doesn't he see her for not as a princess anymore? But he sees her for who she is. Okay.
Right. At some point, she changes how she looks because she doesn't want to go back there, you know, look bad if she returns as the princess.
Yeah. And she still has this, he's shocked that she wants to go back there, but she still has this duty to protect her kingdom that she came from and tell the king what really is going on, to protect the princess from marrying this douchebag. And then she tells him she wants to leave. She doesn't want to live in that kingdom anymore because she's really heartbroken that the king told her, you know, you are under my command. You're, you know, instead of treating her like the daughter she always thought he thought of her as, she's so heartbroken. She's like, yeah, I want to leave the kingdom anyway. I will come back to you. Plus, she's drawn to him. There's an attraction between them. I love the fact that she left that dagger with him as proof that she was, in fact, going to come back to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what'd you think?
I loved this book. Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. Scared the crap out of me. I was sitting on the edge of my seat the entire time I was reading it, wondering what was going to happen. I think the author did an amazing job of developing the characters. And I've already blown through the next book, the third book, the fourth book, and I'm halfway through or almost done with the fifth book.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nice.
I would definitely give this. They don't have sex, obviously. So I would give this book probably, I would say, 5 panties. Damn panties.
Oh, wow.
Because you know something's going to happen, but you don't know what. They don't have sex, so they can't be wet. But I really like this book, and I highly recommend it. What did you think?
So I also really liked this book. So for me, this was a reread because I had already read this book a long time ago, like years ago.
Yeah.
And I had already read the first book and the second book. So on this reread, I reread it, did the highlights for the podcast. Still really enjoyed it. I think I would give it like 4.5 panties. Not really wet or anything, because like you're saying, like nothing, it's romantic, but nothing physical happens with them. I did love all the little bondy feelings with them. I liked the banter between her and the one prince. Then there was kind of the sad feelings between her and the king because of this weird, not father-daughter, but potentially father sort of daughter relationship they have. And so I reread this for the podcast, and then I also reread book 2.
And oh, you did?
Yeah, it's a very slow burn, I would say, for when they finally kind of get together. But when they do finally get together, it's so satisfying in like the way that they end up together. Not like satisfying even like a hookup way, but in a just like romantic fantasy read sort of way. And then it has good setup for books 3 and 4, which are a different couple. And then 5 and 6 is a different couple again. And I would definitely read 3 and 4, etc. I just haven't read it yet because I read the next book for the podcast. And I've been reading like something totally random lately.
Oh, so, yeah. I'm halfway through our next book for the pod because I'm reading 2 books at once.
Yeah. So for me, I would say this is another good example of, even though I wasn't personally a fan of the Dragon Chained book and I didn't read any more of that series, I do really like this book by the author. So, you know, and I think I mentioned this the last episode we even had, like, even if one book by the author is not necessarily doing it for you, like, try something else by them. It might be better. This is a good example of that. It's like, my reception of this book is way different from how I felt about the Dragon Chained book.
Yeah, I wrote down a couple of other series that she's written that I'm going to try too. And I'm really glad that, well, one, I liked her last book, the Dragon Chained book, but I'm really glad I found her as another author, because for me, when you find an author that you like and you've read all their books, it's really heartbreaking because it's like, what now? Right?
Right. And plus she's on KU, which makes it even better because then you really can just binge a bunch of her stuff.
Yes, I agree with that. There was something else I was going to say about this book, and I don't remember what it was because I have a brain like a sieve at this point. Oh, I know what I was going to say. This book to me, and you're not going to believe I'm saying this, it is the perfect balance for the type of book I like to read, because there's intrigue, there's suspense, there's stuff that's revealed And I realize by reading this book that these really are the types of books that I enjoy even sometimes more so than the books that are just a lot of sex. I need a lot of good story. And if you throw some sex in there, to me, it's the perfect balance. But this, I'm drawn to this kind of book more so than the book that is just blatantly talking about the sex act.
Yeah, because you want the fantasy, you want the romance. If they do hook up, you want to have it be hot and steamy.
Right.
You know, sometimes if you're reading a book like that, you don't want it to be fade to black or whatever. Because you're like, what's the point? If I can read about them beheading somebody, I can read about them giving head, right?
Yeah. But the other thing is, I don't want page after page after page of just description of somebody having sex. To me, it's too much.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I agree. So I definitely recommend people check this one out. It was really good.
Okay. Do you want to tell people what our next book is going to be?
Yes. Our next book is another book by an author we've featured before on the podcast. This book is The Alpha of Bleak Isle by Catherine Moon. The book we did with her before was The Games with an Orc, Games with the Orc.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And this one's totally different. It's also a longer book as well. I think it was 400 pages or something.
I'm really glad that we're able to read longer books now, because I think it opens up a whole avenue of possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Oh, I know what else I'm doing besides reading those two books. I'm listening to J.R. Ward's audiobook. Oh, hold on. It's Bee's Story. So, because I've been painting and doing some other things, I want to listen to something. I'm kind of sick of, it seems like all there are murder shows or murder podcasts, and I'm kind of sick of it. It's like I want something else to occupy my mind. So this one is called Lover Unbound, and it's the story about Bee and how he meets Doc Jane. And even though I've read the book, I know what I was going to tell you. So I'm on this particular Facebook group that talks about J.R. Ward and the Black Dagger Brotherhood. And, you know, she put out the latest book. It's called The Beloved, which I really liked. It was a big time jump, but I ended up really, really liking the book. So there's mixed statements in this group about some people like it. Some people don't like it. And so this one woman put this long post and said, you know, I am not going to read this book. And, you know, the kids are grown up and blah, blah, blah. She just went on and on about the book. And I put a comment that said, you know, I was kind of leery when I started this book, but I got to say, I really liked it. Maybe you should at least try it and see what you think. You know, what you think, you may end up liking it. And she bit my head off like there was no tomorrow. I have no desire to read about the adult children's, you know, mating or sex. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. You know, I can't believe how people get so freaking worked up. I guess they have no power in any other avenue of their life. And I feel like I have power everywhere in my life. So I don't feel the need to attack somebody on, you know, a post like that. So I said, I answered her and I said, I'm sorry. I just thought it was a really good book. And not every book I read is great. I agree with that. But this book ended up, I really enjoyed it. And I was just trying to suggest that maybe you give it a chance. And there were a lot of people in the following posts that agreed with me, but there, of course, there were always also the Karens in there that are like, why are people forcing her to read this book? And it's like, did I say anything about forcing anybody to read a book? It's like, calm the the fuck down.
If this isn't a group, I mean, don't you think?
I also think that it's really weird if it's a Facebook group dedicated to an author and a person, the original poster is saying, I will never, ever, ever, ever read this book by this author because of X, Y, or Z reason, that the moderators would even allow that post to come through. Why?
I don't know. I don't know anything about the moderators, but it is specifically, it's just a J.R. Ward Brotherhood Facebook dedicated specifically to her. And, you know, I've listened to a couple of her other, like, consumed. I listened to that on audio. I've read some of her other books that weren't about the Brotherhood. But, yeah, the whole thing is, especially the Brotherhood series, there were some books in that series that, sure, I, you know, they weren't my favorite, but I still loved reading them. Mm-hmm. Why are you even in the group? Calm down. Fuck, go get laid so you can calm the fuck down, will ya?
Yeah, it's very weird, huh?
Yeah. And I said nothing. I thought, bitch, if I was going to come at you, believe me, you would know I was going to come at, I was coming at you. That I was not coming at you.
Yeah, you were just saying, hey, you actually were sympathizing with her because you're like, I felt the same way, but I ended up reading it and I actually enjoyed it. Maybe if you tried it, you would enjoy it as well. Like, I shocked myself by liking it. Maybe you'll shock yourself too, but that was a little too much for you to say, I guess.
Well, plus, it's like, it's not like it's a book about pedophilia, for God's sake. These are, the children are now grown. It's, I forget, it's 25-year leap in time. The children are grown. They're adults, you know. Mm-hmm. Far old enough to be having sex.
Yeah. Well.
All right.
Oh, well.
That's my 2 cents. Yeah. Whatever.
Well, I'm also listening to an audiobook. And I can't remember if I was listening to this when we recorded the last episode, but it's due in 4 days from the library. Uh-oh. So I got to hurry up and fucking finish it. I'm almost done. I'm at 87%. But the book is An Ember in the Ashes by Saba Tahir. Yeah. I'm still listening to that. And I also have an audiobook to start next of a new release that I kept seeing ads for on Facebook, I think. And hopefully this audiobook is good. I don't know this author at all. But the audiobook is 5 Broken Blades. And the author is Mai Corland.
Okay. Which app are you listening to that Ember in the Ashes? Is it Hulu or is it, which one is it?
Libby.
Okay.
And then the book I'm reading right now, which is totally random, but because we have 2 weeks between recordings, I have time to read random shit, which is wonderful. So I am reading a book that is called Wings So Wicked by Emily Blackwood. And I've never heard of this author before. I think this was Amazon. You know, sometimes if you're looking at something on Amazon and then below it will have recommendations. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yes.
The this rabbit was one hole. Of those. Yeah. So I'm trying that one. I'm at about 20% so far. It's pretty good. And I also have downloaded the last book in the trilogy from Sherry L. Tapscott. Sunset Horizon is the name of that book. It just came out. I'm very excited because I read the first 2 books in that trilogy, and now I can read the last book.
I am still on the waiting list for the second book by, is it Rebecca Yarrow? What is that book
Yarrow's
called?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm still on the waiting list. I'm like, for the love of God, I'm forgetting everything that happened in the first book. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think maybe I should just buy an audiobook, but they're so expensive. I don't want to get in the habit of doing that. I'm bad with money as it is.
Audiobooks are really, really expensive. Even if you have Audible through Amazon, it's really not worth it. I mean, yeah. I have an audiobook on here. The estimate is 8 weeks on Libby, but I'll just keep waiting till it shows up.
Yeah. I think there were 54 people ahead of me waiting for that book. I'm like, oh God. And every once in a while I get notices, oh, your number, whatever. And it's like, just send me a big notice when I've got it, please. And at this point, there's nothing on TV. I'm over TV, and I would rather listen to a tape, a book on audio than, and then I'm free to do other things I want to do.
I mean, that is the good thing about audiobooks, is you can listen to them while you, like right now, I'm probably going to try to finish that audiobook while I do some laundry and clean up the house a little bit.
Yeah, I have two other appointments today, so I'm busy.
Okay, well.
I got to pick Mr. Poor Little Mr. Biglet is at the groomer's. God damn. I cannot believe how expensive the groomer is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even spend that on myself. I'm going to be so flush when I don't have dogs anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I could be living a high life. That's how I feel about my house being clean. I'm like, my house is going to be so fucking clean when I don't have these dogs anymore, because one of the dogs we have sheds so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you literally vacuum the house every single day. He sheds so much. So I'm like, oh, my house is going to be fucking spotless when I have no dogs.
Well, my house is going to be stunning, because I have no idea what my furniture looks like, because I haven't seen it in 25 years. It's always under sheets, because my big dog has the habit of drooling on everything. And as she's getting older, she's not the cleanest when she goes outside to do her business anymore. So I'm like, your God. Yeah, it's gross. Your daughter told me the other day when I picked her up, again, she said something about getting rid of the dogs. And I said to her, when you get an animal, it is a lifetime commitment. If you cannot make a lifetime commitment to that dog, I go, you don't think Angel annoys the shit out of me? She annoys the crap out of me. And because she's smarter than me, she makes my life a living hell. But yeah, I've made this commitment to her. And you can't not take care of your animal, and just, they're not disposable.
Right.
I'm sure no wonder she loves spending time with me.
Well, she hears the same thing from us, because I'm constantly complaining about the dogs because they annoy the shit out of me. And I actually literally hate having dogs. I've decided I'm never having dogs again. And so she already knows, like, why do you complain about pets when you still have them? And I say the same thing to her. Like, I can't get rid of them. They bug the shit out of me, but I have to keep them. Like, you don't have a choice. Yeah. So.
Well, that's kinda like, she kind of mumbled to me, mom doesn't even like the dog. I go, yes, but your mother has at least enough integrity to keep the dog, because she has made a commitment. Oh, and she was also telling me about the bunny hasn't gotten fixed. I go, well, you have a job now where you're making money. Why don't you pay to have the bunny fixed? She goes, oh, what does it cost? I go, I don't know. You would need to check into that if you're a responsible pet owner.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. She could pay for it.
Yeah, and she told me she lost her retainer. I said, that's another thing you can pay for. You have money now. This is called responsibility.
Hashtag adulting.
Yeah, this is why my grandchildren love to spend time with me. They get all the lecturing from the grandmother. No wonder I haven't seen them in months. No, she was really sweet when I picked her up. And when she got out of the car, she's like, bye, Grandma. Thank you. I love you. So it's all worth it. Yeah.
Right.
And I did bite my tongue a lot of the time when she was telling me stuff. I'm like, that's great. That's awesome. Oh, you're going to be happy doing that. Yeah, I do all that.
Good.
Balance.
Good job.
It's all Sergeant Proud. It's all about balance.
Very proud of you.
Oh, geez. Thank you. You're welcome. I'm learning. See, who says you can't teach an old dog new tricks? Right here, ladies and gentlemen, right here. All right. So I'm glad we read that book. I'm glad you enjoyed rereading it and that you read the other two. We could talk about that too offline at some point because I really like these books. All right, babe. You have a fabulous day.
All right. You too. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Bonded Books Podcast. You can rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Our email is bondedbookspodcast@gmail.com. And check the show notes for a link to all of our social media.